your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today, we are devoting our show to the subject of a rare type of cancer in women involving tumors of the placenta. Some of you may have heard the term, quote, molar pregnancy, unquote, or choriocarcinoma. These are both conditions that we'll be discussing in detail today. The more technical terminology is known as gestational trophoblastic neoplasia, which is GTN for short. My first guest today is Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist at the University of Kentucky College of Medicine. Dr. Modisett treats women with this condition. Later in the show, we'll have on the authors of the only patient book on this subject, Tara Johnson, a choriocarcinoma survivor, and Meredith Schwartz, a graduate student in bioethics. Their new book is called Gestational Trophoblastic Neoplasia, A Guide for Women Dealing with Tumors of the Placenta. So let's begin with Dr. Modisett. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I guess as we were chatting before the show, I'd like to start with a discussion of what these tumors are, how they form, and how we detect them.
Right. And this is somewhat complicated because it can occur in several different settings. I want to start first with molar pregnancies, and some of the listeners may have heard of this. These are abnormal pregnancies that women think that they're pregnant. They go to their doctor and are diagnosed with, again, what's called a molar pregnancy. And these never had a normal baby forming. They never were going to be normal pregnancies. And so women then undergo what's called a dilation and curettage, where the molar pregnancy is removed from the uterus. And most women will not require any kind of treatment after treatment for a molar pregnancy. Unfortunately, some women will then develop either a component of this molar pregnancy that invades into the uterus or even a component that can travel to other parts of the body, kind of like a cancer, and require more extensive treatment with chemotherapy. Chemotherapy are drugs given through a vein, usually, to treat cancer. And so most of these pregnancy-related cancers come after a molar pregnancy. Now,
after a molar pregnancy.
Right. Most molar pregnancies would not develop into a cancerous condition that required treatment. Only about 20% would go on to require chemotherapy. That 1 in 5. And molar pregnancies are relatively common. They can happen anywhere between 1 in 600 pregnancies up to 1 in 2,000 pregnancies. So one out of about every 2,000 pregnancies in the United States will be one of these molar pregnancies.
So GTN, or gestational trophoblastic neoplasia, refers to all kinds of sort of placental tumors.
Right, placental or abnormal pregnancy tumors. And so some of those are molar pregnancies and never will have any other problems, and some of them will develop into these cancers. So the molar pregnancies, and then you can have these tumors that can develop after a normal pregnancy or a tubal pregnancy, where a pregnancy has happened in the tube, or even after a spontaneous abortion where someone had essentially a miscarriage. So it's much more rare after something like that, but it can occur after that as well, where you develop cells from the placentas of these pregnancies that essentially, to put it loosely, become cancerous.
Now, how? So basically, how is this detected?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll do molar pregnancies first because that's usually the easiest one to diagnose. Is women have all the symptoms of pregnancy, so they go into their physician, and usually now ultrasounds are so common that once women have a positive pregnancy test, either a urine or a blood test, they will then get an ultrasound. And instead of seeing an amniotic sac, the little sac that holds the fetus and the embryo, you just see a lot of almost debris in the uterus. You don't see anything that looks like a sac or a baby. And so that's usually the first sign.
So a woman is actually expecting, she's expecting something else, and she gets this news.
Right.
How do most, in your experience, how do most women take this news?
Oh, it's a really tough situation because, you know, they're coming in expecting that they're going to see a baby and a baby's heartbeat, and then all of a sudden they're finding out that there's not a pregnancy, or there is a pregnancy, but it's not normal and there was never going to be a baby. And that's really hard because even though they're not usually very far along, they're still all the thoughts that, you know, as soon as you find out you're pregnant, you think you're going to have a baby and you start kind of projecting into the future. And so even though it was never a normal baby or a pregnancy, there's still a loss of what was normal. And what the expectations were. So women usually have a very tough time. And it's also a very tough concept to explain to them that it was not going to be a normal pregnancy ever. And that you have to do a procedure to remove the tissue, to prevent it spreading.
Now, there are situations, where, for example, the author, Tara Johnson, who we're going to have on later, it's my understanding that she had a full-term
mm-hmm.
pregnancy,
yes.
and then it was discovered afterwards. So how does that scenario
right.
work?
So what happens that, and that is relatively rare, about one in about 20,000 live births will be complicated by what's called gestational choriocarcinoma, which is a subtype of the GTN, or gestational trophoblastic neoplasia, which we all say GTN because nobody can say the other thing. So it's a very rare subset. And it can happen, as I had said before, after a term pregnancy, after a tubal pregnancy, or after a miscarriage, as well as after the molar pregnancy. So it can happen any of those times. And that's relatively rare. What happened in her situation is that the part of the placenta had these changes in it that allowed it to continue to grow after the baby was born. And how that usually presents is women, after having had a delivery, there is a normal amount of bleeding that happens for about 6 weeks after delivery, kind of like a period that slowly tapers off. And in her situation, she just had continued bleeding and much more excessive bleeding than she should have had. And that's what would clue someone in that there was a problem. But it is so rare that most probable general OBGYNs have never, ever seen a case of it.
Really? So that's obviously a problem
mm-hmm.
for the patient.
Yeah. Now, you know, people should probably recognize that there's a certain amount of bleeding that is too much. And it can be something like a retained placenta where the placenta hasn't all come out with the pregnancy. And that is relatively common and much more common than GTN. And so most physicians would probably think of that first, or hormonal problems. Sometimes with pregnancy and lactation, the lining of the uterus is very thin and can have some bleeding as well. And so those are things that are much more common. And so people would probably think of that before they thought of something like choriocarcinoma.
I see. Okay. So basically, what we're basically talking about are tumors that can both benign and malignant that can form at two different stages of pregnancy. One, so molar pregnancy is more at the beginning, and it's never a normal pregnancy.
Right.
It's sort of like a faux pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a result of a pregnancy, either a tubal pregnancy, pregnancy loss, in some other way, or even a full term pregnancy, something can go wrong afterwards.
Exactly.
And there can be sort of residual tissue that begins to develop into tumors.
Exactly.
That's okay. All right, just so that we have an understanding of that. Now, what are some of the common psychosocial effects of this experience?
Well, every woman's a little bit different, and it depends on the circumstances. for a lot of women, and we've talked about earlier, that's dealing with the whole loss of, even if it wasn't a normal pregnancy, the loss of having a child. And then for some of my patients, after they've had a molar pregnancy and have had problems afterwards, their risk is higher in a second pregnancy. So we said earlier that, let's just say, the rate of a molar pregnancy is 1 in 1,500 pregnancies. After you've had one molar pregnancy, you're at higher risk for another molar pregnancy. So instead of 1 in 1,500, it's now 1 in 150.
I see.
So still very low. I mean, almost a 99% chance you would have a normal pregnancy, but that's still a risk that some women just aren't willing to face, having gone through all the treatment and what you have to do for a molar pregnancy or GTN, that they just don't want to do that again. And so then they decide not to have any more children, and that can cause, some of my patients have had trouble with depression and having to work through those things with their partner.
Now, in terms of, we were saying before the show had begun when we were chatting, we were talking about the who is more likely to experience mm-hmm. this, and it's older women, older pregnancies.
Yeah, there is a higher incidence in women, especially women over 40. There is also an association with some dietary things. There are certain areas in the world that have higher risks of molar pregnancy as well as GTN, and they seem to go along with areas that have lower vitamin A consumption. And so that explains part of it. We see it more often in Asian countries and other countries that have less animal fat and the vitamin A going in it.
So more of a vegetarian diet vitamin A sources,
right.
From animal sources.
You can get some of it from animal because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. You can also beta-carotene, which is in carrots, is obviously a good source. So you can get it from vegetable sources as well. But
not the leafy greens as
right.
much. Yeah.
So there are regional differences. So some of the Native American populations in the United States have a little bit higher rate. Again, the Asian populations have a higher rate. And then the Western world kind of has a very similar rate.
So when you're in talking about the finding a when women experience this, they're not always with, or more often than not, they're going to be with a doctor that probably hasn't seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we're going to have to take a break.
Okay.
But we've been talking about tumors of the placenta with Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist. For more information about tumors of the placenta, such as molar pregnancy or choriocarcinoma, we suggest starting with the only book on the subject for women, Gestational Trophoblastic Neoplasia, A Guide for Women Dealing with Tumors of the Placenta, published by Your Health Press. The book will be available on Amazon later this year. In the meantime, you can order it from yourhealthpress.com. When we come back, we'll talk more about diagnosing and treating tumors of the placenta. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
stay mentally, physically, and emotionally fit with Younger Every Day. Hosted by Dr. Bob Payson. Broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Younger Every Day will offer you alternative solutions for a variety of health issues, all backed by clinical, scientific, and medical data. Dr. Payson and other expert guests will inform and inspire people of all ages to look and feel better. Younger Every Day. Think clear, feel strong, grow younger. With Dr. Bob Payson, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell that saves from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sara Health Radio with Dr. Sara Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sara.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sara Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sara Health with Dr. Sara Rosenthal and our discussion of tumors of the placenta. We are talking with Dr. Sudhin Modisit, gynecologic oncologist, and we're going to talk now, we're going to turn our attention to treatment for these conditions, and Dr. Modisit, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, first talk a little bit about molar pregnancies. We already talked about that a lot of the GTN happens after molar pregnancies. About 20% of women with molar pregnancies will have persistent disease either within the uterus or it can spread elsewhere. And so after a DNC, which is an evacuation of the uterus using suction, we follow these women with a marker, which is called HCG, which is human chorionic gonadotropin, which is a hormone produced by the placenta. Most women would know this because this is the hormone that you check for when you have a pregnancy test.
Right. This is what tells you if you're pregnant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you can quantify it and get an actual number, which normally we don't do in a normal pregnancy because it just really matters if you're pregnant or not. The actual hormone level doesn't matter. But after a molar pregnancy, it's important to follow this HCG or hormone level to make sure it goes back down to normal. Because that tells us that there's no more of this placental tissue around and it's not producing any problems, and then women can go on with their lives. So after a molar pregnancy, you get a DNC. You then, we recommend not trying to get pregnant for at least 6 months because we're going to be following that pregnancy marker. And if it goes up and you haven't been using contraception, we don't know whether, initially we wouldn't know whether it's up another pregnancy or the molar tumor coming back. So then after the 6 months, if the HCG level is normal, then we would encourage women, if they desire it, that they could go on with another pregnancy.
So essentially, while women are being followed, they have to, would it be a good idea then to practice two methods of birth control to sort of have a backup method?
Right.
So that they ensure they're not?
We would usually recommend actually something that's really reliable, like a hormonal method, either birth control pills or something like that. If that's not possible for any number of reasons, then we would recommend condoms or spermicides or something like that, but some very good method initially, so that there's no confusion about what happens if the HCG level goes up.
Right.
Now, for 20% of women, they're going to develop persistent tumor or even metastatic, where it has spread somewhere else, and that we'll know that relatively quickly because the HCG level won't go back to normal and will even start rising again. And when that happens, then we have to look and make sure that the tumor is where it is. Usually it will be just in the uterus, but we also want to make sure it hasn't spread anyplace else. It can go to the lungs, it can go to the vagina, it can go to the liver, it can go multiple other places. So we would do kind of radiographic tests to evaluate that to make sure it has not spread anywhere else. Then treatment depends on what your findings are. If it's very localized disease, and we call it a low-risk disease, then we would treat with single-agent chemotherapy, which is usually one of two drugs, either methotrexate or actinomycin-D, usually given weekly or every other weekly until the HCG or the hormone levels go down to normal, and then we give a couple treatments past that and then follow them just like we would anyone else to make sure it doesn't come back. If it's a high-risk disease where there is metastatic disease elsewhere, then sometimes we would treat with combination chemotherapy, which can be very rough on women because it can be up to five different types of drugs and a very tough schedule. But even with advanced disease that has spread other places, our cure rates are very good for this disease. Kind of like Lance Armstrong. He had not this kind of disease, but he had something involving his lungs and his brain, and he was able to be cured by chemotherapy. So it is definitely treatable, unlike some other cancers when they've spread.
Is it, now, I think we're going to hear about this a bit later from our next guest, but basically women who have this problem and are told that they have dismal chances, how common is that to sort of get the wrong information?
I would say relatively uncommon, because most OBGYNs are going to not want to treat this because it's something that they haven't seen and they don't have a lot of expertise. And so initially they might get some different information, but usually at least hard to say, but most people would know that the treatment options are very good, even with advanced disease. Now,
they would refer
a lot of people would refer to one of the big centers that does a lot of this. It wouldn't be something if you did have metastatic GTN, it's not something that you would probably want to do at your local hospital. You would probably want to go to a cancer center for treatment.
But an 80% cure rates are that's quite high.
That's for stage 4 disease, so something that may have even gone to the brain or the lungs or something like that. So, you know, you would love 100%, and it is pretty much 100% for anything that's not that advanced. It is very rare that we have a woman die of this disease now. That's not to say it doesn't happen. It very occasionally does, but we're able to treat most women very successfully.
And I mean, when we're talking about other types of cancers in women, how does this type of cure rate compare with breast cancer or ovarian cancer?
Oh, it's phenomenally better. To put it in perspective, ovarian cancer is normally diagnosed in an advanced stage. Stage just means, stage one usually means confined to wherever the cancer started, and stage four means it's spread throughout the body. And so for example, a stage 3 ovarian cancer, our 5-year survival rate is 30%, and that's not cure. That means 30% of women are still going to be alive at 5 years, and only maybe 10% of those women are going to be cured. So in comparison, this is a much better prognosis tumor, which is good.
Which is very good news. I mean, I think that's what makes all the difference also, is having the right information.
Right.
and understanding that there is treatment available. Now what I wanted to ask you then is so basically the HCG becomes sort of the tumor marker, mm-hmm. that you're following. And so basically at a stage, I know we didn't want to get too much into this, but in advanced stages, what happens then is you actually have tumor that invades, like it can become distantly metastatic,
mm-hmm.
it invades distant organs.
Right, and it'll set up shop there and produce that hormone kind of wherever it is. It will hijack the body's blood system in other areas.
But the fact that you can actually, not all cancers have such tumor markers.
Right.
So the fact that you have such a strong indicator of where it is in the body must be good news for an oncologist.
Yeah, it is nice because it is a very sensitive marker, and we can see very immediately how our treatment is impacting. I mean, for example, the HCG levels can be very high. They can be, you know, 500,000 or a million, and then you do a DNC and it goes all the way down to 15,000 and then can go all the way down to zero. So it is a very good marker. There are occasionally, very, very rarely, some women that will have a falsely elevated HCG, but that is exceedingly rare and actually has only been reported over the last probably 5 or 10 years. For most patients, we can follow it very accurately.
And that's definitely that's an advantage.
Yeah.
It's hard to find something like that, for example, with breast cancer.
Oh, yeah, breast cancer doesn't really have any tumor markers. Ovarian has some, but they're not great. And, for example, endometrial or cervical cancers don't have any tumor markers, so you have to rely on exam and radiographic tests.
Now, in talking about the chemotherapy, you'd mentioned that there's sort of two different regimens. There's
mm-hmm.
one where you're using two different drugs, and then there's one where you're using about five different drugs.
Right.
In the simpler regimen, what are some of the side effects that women can expect?
Okay. For the low-risk diseases, we use single agent, and there are two drugs that people use, and which drug people use is really dependent on what they like better. I would say the more common one would be methotrexate, which is actually used in some not cancerous conditions as well. We use it for sometimes treatment of tubal pregnancies who avoid surgery. It's also used in some of the arthritis.
Yeah, that's right. Methotrexate is it's used as a chemical abortion agent sometimes, isn't it?
No, not a chemical abortion agent. There are some other medicines for that, but as a treatment for a tubal pregnancy, which is a pregnancy in the tube, which can't survive. And so usually we had always operated on those women and removed the pregnancy and sometimes the tube. But for very early pregnancies that are diagnosed in the tube, you can give the methotrexate instead, and it'll shrink it away.
Wow. So basically with methotrexate, what are some of the side effects?
Well, the things that we look for is anytime you have chemotherapy, what it does is it interferes with the body's ability to replicate itself. Cancer cells replicate or reproduce very quickly, and so when you give chemotherapy, it is taken up by the cancer cells much more so than the normal cells in your body, because they're going faster, so it goes to them and interrupts their cell cycle and causes them not to be able to reproduce anymore and to die. So any chemotherapy affects the cells in your body that do replicate or reproduce relatively quickly, and the common ones are the cells that line the intestinal tract. So nausea and vomiting and diarrhea are very common symptoms that women who are undergoing any kind of chemotherapy can have. Also, there can be problems with the liver, in that's where the liver removes a lot of toxins from your blood, and so sometimes there can be liver problems because it's processing the chemotherapy.
You're used to the music. We're going to take a break now. We've been talking about tumors of the placenta with Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist. For more information about tumors of the placenta, such as molar pregnancy or choriocarcinoma, we suggest starting with the only book on this subject for women, Gestational Trophoblastic Neoplasia, A Guide for Women Dealing with Tumors of the Placenta, published by Your Health Press. The book will be available on Amazon later this year. In the meantime, you can order it from yourhealthpress.com. When we come back, we'll talk with the authors of this book and learn about their experiences with tumors of the placenta. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of tumors of the placenta. We are talking with Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist, and we're now joined by at least one of the authors of the only book on this topic, Meredith Schwartz, and I'm not sure if we have both authors on the line. Meredith, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Meredith, what I wanted to sort of focus on was I know that your Tara Johnson, one of the co-authors' best friends, and I'm wondering if you can sort of walk me through how you got involved in this project. And unfortunately, I don't think we were able to patch Tara in on the line. But if you can sort of, I guess, take us back to when Tara sort of learned that she had choriocarcinoma and how that whole process unfolded.
Right. Well, it was a difficult diagnosis for her because they didn't suspect choriocarcinoma because she'd had a live birth with a healthy baby and had had no complications throughout her pregnancy. So, and she just thought it was normal bleeding, but it just continued and continued, and about 6 months after her baby was born, she had a really massive hemorrhage, and this is actually during her son's birthday party, so there's a whole bunch of people around.
It was
quite dramatic, and she had to go to the hospital while myself and some of the other adults stayed and kept the party going. But at that time, they missed it because when they tested for her HCG level, they assumed it had been a miscarriage that she'd been experiencing. So they didn't diagnose the choriocarcinoma right away, and it wasn't until her baby girl was 9 months old that she actually got a correct diagnosis, and
so,
because
okay.
She was still bleeding at that time.
So Susan, mm-hmm. could you comment on sort of what is going on medically here?
Yeah, unfortunately, what happened with her, you know, we talked about it earlier, 1 in 20,000 pregnancies would be complicated by a choriocarcinoma. So it is rare, and most general OB-GYNs won't see it. If women have bleeding that lasts more than 6 weeks after a normal delivery, they really should be evaluated to make sure at that point that there is not any problem with gestational trophoblastic neoplasia, or GTN. And it sounds like that wasn't done. And then it is hard if it, once it gets that far out from the pregnancy, a lot of people will think, well, the more common thing would be that she got pregnant again and she had a miscarriage and that's why it was elevated. And so it's like many things. If you don't think about it in your differential as a physician, you're not going to make the right diagnosis.
Oh,
and it's just really tragic that she had to go through all that bleeding first.
Yeah. So Meredith, then so then when did she finally get diagnosed?
So it was 9 months after she had given birth that she finally got diagnosed, which was quite a long time. And I heard you were talking earlier about the different stages of the disease. So by the time she got diagnosed, she had tumors in her lungs as well,
mm-hmm.
and she was considered to be high risk. And
yep.
So she got the 5-drug chemotherapy instead of the easier, shorter course. So that was too bad. But I think one of the scarier things for us was really not having any information, because we turned to books and we found that there wasn't anything out there. And then the next place we went was the internet. And of course the internet, sometimes you can get good information, but sometimes the information that you get is inaccurate. And I remember the first night that she found out that she had this choriocarcinoma, neither of us had ever heard of it. So we went to the internet and we started looking it up, and you know, one of the websites would say it's very easy to cure, almost everyone gets cured. And then we went to this other website that said it's almost always missed, so it's very deadly. Mm-hmm. And we got worried because hers had been missed, and so we started thinking, oh, no, you know, even if it's okay in some cases, maybe we're not one. But we didn't really have any good method of evaluating this information, because we didn't have anything that was written so that patients could understand that gave us clear information about what goes on with this disease.
So what was so essentially you were sort of in the role of the support person.
Yes.
And you were accompanying Tara to all of her doctor's appointments, and you were kind of in charge of finding out more information. What were you noticing about the doctor's appointments and the way in which information was conveyed?
Well, it really depends on the doctor that you have, because some doctors are really good at conveying information well, and other doctors aren't. So Tara actually had, I think it was a total of 3 or maybe it was even 4 doctors during her course of choriocarcinoma treatment, because the first doctor that she had at the start was really not good at conveying information, and she'd ask him questions, and he was very resistant to answering these questions. And at the time, Tara didn't realize that patients have a right to information, so she didn't press him maybe as hard as she could have. But then once she did find out that patients have this right to information from their doctor, she sort of brought this up with him, and he refused to change his attitude. And so she switched to a second doctor, and the second doctor was really good. He took a lot of time with her. He'd answer her questions. He'd even answer her questions if she'd already asked them a few days ago and was unclear. So it really depends on the particular doctor that you have. So in the second case, we got really good information from the doctor, but not so much in the first case.
And I guess from a medical perspective, Dr. Modisa, would that be, is it perhaps, do you think you attribute that to the fact that maybe the first doctor really didn't have the knowledge base?
I don't know, because I don't know the particulars in that case. What I would say is that doctors, just like people, have different management styles. And some of them, and I don't want to be too broad in a generalization, but I would say a lot of kind of the older generation doctors are kind of more used to a paternalistic attitude that I'm the doctor and I'm just going to tell you what the best course is and you as the patient are just going to follow it, versus I think most of the younger generation, again, this is very general, are much more willing and want the patient to be more of a partner and say, look, here are our options, here's what's going on, what do you want out of this? And especially in cancer situations, there are lots of different ways that things can be managed. You know, sometimes you may be going for quality of life versus quantity of life, and these are discussions that I have with my patients, and I have to let them weigh in on what they want, because what I think they want may not be what they in fact do want. So what I would encourage all patients to do is really have this discussion with your doctor, and I tell my patients to make a list, because as soon as you say cancer, no one remembers anything that you say after that, really. And so I tell them to keep a notepad with them and keep a list of all the questions that come up in between times they talk to me, and have a person with them to help them write down answers when we go through things. Because again, it is really a new field for most patients and very difficult to kind of comprehend what's going on.
And the vocabulary. That was another thing that we thought was really difficult, was learning the new vocabulary that comes with the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, for GTN, I mean, my medical students and residents who have a lot of medical background have a huge difficulty understanding all this. So to then expect patients to understand everything right away is very hard.
Now, one of the things, in getting to writing this book, it's my understanding that Tara began sort of a journaling process.
Yeah, there's several things that happened. One was I was working at the Toronto Sick Kids Hospital, and so I had access to a whole lot of medical journals. So one of the things that we were doing was looking up the medical information on choriocarcinoma and sort of looking up all the words that were in the articles and writing them down and trying to rework the articles so that they were easier for us to understand. And Tara had also started writing down how she was feeling, because she was finding that she was putting off dealing with a lot of the things that she maybe otherwise would have dealt with immediately, but just because she had so much to go through physically and so many uncertainties all of a sudden arose, she didn't feel like she could make the same kind of, you know, life decisions that she had been. And so she started writing down how she was feeling and what she was going through so she could revisit them later. And so she had this diary of how she was feeling and what was going on, which was really helpful when we came to write the book as well.
When part of your process also involved looking at listers online and sort of communicating with other women that were going through this, What was your experience with that, and did you find that there was sort of a common universal experience with choriocarcinoma?
No, actually, the experiences with choriocarcinoma were really different, and I think part of that had to do with because it's such a rare disease, there aren't any local support groups like there are for other kinds of cancer. So if you get breast cancer, you know, it's very likely that there'll be a breast cancer support group for other women who have or have survived breast cancer that will be close to wherever you're living. With choriocarcinoma, that's not the case. So what we did was we went online, and there's a Yahoo support group that has women with molar pregnancies and choriocarcinoma. But these women come from all over the world. So there's women from Canada, the United States, Kuala Lumpur, Australia, you know, Great Britain, and just everywhere. And so because they have very different healthcare systems in these places, they got very different treatment and had different issues. Like in some places, insurance is a big issue. For us, it wasn't an issue because being in Canada, most things are paid for other than the side effects drugs.
Oh, we're gonna take a break now. We've been talking about tumors of the placenta with Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist, and one of the authors of the only book for women on tumors of the placenta, Meredith Schwartz. And Tara Johnson has not been able to be patched into this show. For more information about tumors of the placenta, such as molar pregnancy or choriocarcinoma, we suggest starting with their book, Gestational Trophoblastic Neoplasia, A Guide for Women Dealing with Tumors of the Placenta, published by Your Health Press. The book will be available on Amazon later this year. In the meantime, you can order it from yourhealthpress.com. When we come back, we'll talk more with the authors of the book. Hopefully, we may be able to get both Meredith and Tara on the line for the next segment and learn more about their experiences. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Nzeka, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Nzeka broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. For Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of tumors of the placenta. We are now talking to everybody. Dr. Susan Modisit is on the line with us, a gynecologic oncologist. And now we have both authors of the only book on this topic. Tara Johnson has just joined us, and Meredith Schwartz, who was here for the previous segment. So, Tara, get you in on this discussion. What I'd like to talk about is your experience with treatment, because it's my understanding that you had all five drugs that Dr. Modisit was referring to earlier in the show. So maybe you can share with us what that was like.
Oh, well, in the beginning it really wasn't that bad, and I thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a piece of cake, but in the end, like I said, treatments went on and didn't quit. It seemed to get much worse, and there was times when I couldn't even get out of bed and things like that. So, and you just basically don't feel yourself at all. Energy levels and everything is, they're not there, basically. For that, a lot of remembering for treatment times, days taken by treatment, basically not doing anything but going back and forth from the hospital.
So it sounds like you had extreme fatigue and just kind of general malaise would that sort of encompass it. And when and how long were you on this chemo regimen?
Well, I was probably on all the types of regimens that they put me on. because I started getting, my counts weren't reacting to one of the treatments, and then so they switched me over. So it was about almost a year and a half that I was on chemo.
Okay, so that's a long time. Okay.
Yes.
And did you have so essentially as you were going through this treatment, you kept having your HCG levels assessed, and were they consistently going down, or were they staying the same, or
they fluctuated. Like in the beginning, it consistently went down, but near the end, where your counts are like between -2 and say about 100 or 200 even, it really slows down because they seem to half. So when your numbers are higher, it'll be like say 100,000, and it's half that one, and it would jump drastically. And then once the numbers are smaller, then it wouldn't seem like such of a big difference.
I
so
see.
It would be very nerving in the sense of, oh, when's it gonna end?
Now, Dr. Modis, in terms of this sort of watching the numbers and waiting for them to go down, is that sort of normal for the as you get into the lower numbers?
I think Tara had a little more of a resistant disease, in that a year and a half is pretty long, and she had to go through several different regimens. So, you know, it's wonderful that she did so well, but it was a tough time for her. I would say for most women, it goes a little bit quicker than that. But yeah, it's very nerve-wracking for the patients, because you get your level drawn, and then you want to know whether it's working, and then you have to get it down to normal range and then follow it after that, and you get a couple extra insurance chemotherapies usually after it does go to normal to try and prevent it coming back.
Now, Tara, when Meredith was first discussing what was happening, it's my understanding that you think that something was missed. You probably walked around with choriocarcinoma a little bit longer than you needed to.
Yeah.
because when you first presented with the symptoms, they just thought that it was a regular miscarriage. Is that correct?
Yes, they did. Yes, they thought that I had been like about a month and a half pregnant, but my counts weren't working out because I just had Tatum and all that stuff, and so then it was not working out with the time that you're supposed to wait until you can have sex again after you have a baby and everything like that. So it wasn't working out, and they didn't believe me, and it was just.
And Tatum is your that's your first child.
That's my first child. Yes.
Okay, and you only have one child. Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay. Okay, so basically it was just, it just seemed natural that you're probably just having a miscarriage between pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Mata said that, so because this is such a rare,
mm-hmm.
disease, that doesn't seem like it's such an unreasonable conclusion.
Right, I mean, a couple things I would point out. You know, this was her first pregnancy, so she probably, you know, 6 weeks your bleeding should be done. And,
uh-huh.
and so, I think that was the first red flag for me there, mm-hmm. that there was probably still a problem. Now, you also can develop choriocarcinoma after a miscarriage, so could that have happened? Yes, maybe, but looking at everything, probably this was after the Tatum's birth that this happened. And so what I would encourage anyone listening is that if you have bleeding that you really feel like it's not normal, whether it is after a pregnancy or after menopause, anything that's really abnormal bleeding is a sign of something, and you really need to be aggressive, and sometimes physicians need to be hit over the head sometimes to say that this is not normal.
Can I just jump in for a second?
Oh, absolutely.
Another thing I think that the story shows, though, is that it's really important to have a physician that you can feel comfortable with and that you can talk to, because Tara did tell her physician that she
right.
hadn't had sex since the birth of her child.
And they didn't believe
that
her.
Oh, gosh.
So, I mean, it obviously couldn't have been a miscarriage if she hadn't had sex.
Yeah.
So you really need to have a physician who you can feel comfortable talking to and pressing your point if they're not understanding what you're trying to say.
Right.
So.
I agree with that. And I would encourage, especially women sometimes have trouble being as assertive as I would like them to be, because they just think, well, the doctor knows best, and
I'm going to be a good patient and I'm going to do what the doctor tells me. But sometimes if you have that sense that something's not right, then you need to be able to speak up to your physician and say that that's not right and I'm not well and can you look further.
Now, Tara, you're so if you can speak to the frustration that you must have had with getting to the right doctor. how did you do that? How did you eventually find the right person?
Well, when I found the Corio site, the Yahoo site, one of the ladies on there was actually receiving treatment at the same hospital with a different doctor. And she was saying how good he was and everything like that. And I had the other doctor that was, they were basically rivals as well, so it was harder for me to get my nose in there. Plus, the doctor that I had ended up switching to was really busy as well. I wasn't taking on new patients, so it was really hard that way. But I really had to stand up for myself. I basically broke down to the nurses and said, look, you know, I'm at my wit's end here. My doctor is basically not listening to me, not treating me very well, and I need to switch doctors. So they got me in, and they...
And having, you know, I guess, you know, one of the messages, too, that, I mean, what I think makes this book powerful is that, you know, this is also, you had a very strong support person with you.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody would be able to have a friend like Meredith standing by them.
Yeah.
But that must have been an incredible support to you. Yeah. It looks like we're out of time, but I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Susan Modisett, a gynecologic oncologist at the University of Kentucky College of Medicine, and authors Tara Johnson and Meredith Schwartz, who wrote the only book available to women on this topic, entitled Gestational Trophoblastic Neoplasia, A Guide for Women Dealing with Tumors of the Placenta. This book will be available on Amazon later this year, and in the meantime can be ordered through yourhealthpress.com. Next week, we devote our show to the subject of ostomy. If you have an ostomy or know someone who does, you won't want to miss it. Joining us will be a gastroenterologist who has an ostomy himself, along with a wound ostomy nurse. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.